Chapter 65. Jesse stopped at the donut shop and then went straight to the station. He'd hoped to catch up with Stan White and Bella Lawton after leaving the mayor's office. He'd missed them and decided it would be better if he spoke to them separately. Molly had a grin on her face when he came through the station door. Jesse barely noticed. He was preoccupied with Stan White's reaction to the news about the sonnet. Sure, Jester's manager had smiled a big smile when he saw the copy of the poem, but Jesse had expected much more. After all, White and Jester stood to make millions once the tape was recovered and the legalities were sorted out. Molly didn't wait for Jesse to ask. "I think I've got something." "A summer cold?" "You're an ass." "Sorry, I got a lot on my mind." He held the box open to her. "Donut?" "I shouldn't." "Why do women always say that?" "Because women are judged differently than men. How many times have I told you that you would have been a great cop anywhere you chose?" "That's not what I mean, and you know it," she said, looking up at him. "Suit can put on 20 pounds, and you wouldn't see him any differently. You can't say that would be true of me. Diana used to talk to me about not being taken seriously at the bureau because she was beautiful. Women always have to walk a fine line between looking good enough and not looking too good." When she saw Jesse's grim face, she realized what she'd said. "Oh, Jesse, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring up..." He reached out, putting his free hand on her shoulder. "It's okay to talk about her, Molly. I like thinking about her sometimes. And you're right. Women are judged differently, and it's not fair." "Then what's wrong?" He decided against telling her about Tamara's job offer. It wasn't his place to make it public knowledge, and it was his job to sort through his own feelings. "I just told the mayor to fire me or to let me resign." "One day, Jesse, you'll go to that well once too often, and a mayor will call you a bluff. And then you'll wear the crown." "Stop saying that." "You said you had something for me?" "I'll be in your office in a minute," she said, reaching into the donut box. He pulled the box away. "You shouldn't." "Jesse Stone, when you're the voice of my conscience, I'll shoot myself. Now put that box back here." She grabbed a jelly donut. A few minutes later, their roles were reversed. Molly was standing in front of Jesse's desk, holding the composition books from Maud Kane's house in one hand and a file in the other. "Remember we met with Deanna Banker and she described that nasty lodger?" "Evan, any luck?" "Well, I looked through every page in these notebooks, Jesse, and there's not a single mention of anyone named Evan. And the name didn't ring a bell for anyone I spoke with on the phone." "I know you, Crane. You didn't come in here to tell me you failed." "Evan wasn't in the books because Maud Kane didn't consider him a lodger. At least, not a lodger like the other people who stayed in her house."
"Why not?"
"Because he was her nephew." She put the file in front of Jesse. "The day Maud's body was discovered, you told me to start searching for next of kin. Well, after the ME positively identified her, I dropped that search. But I got this back from the municipal clerk's office in Blue Ridge, Vermont. That's the town where Maud Kane's older sister, Mercy Updike, lived."
"Certificate of live birth," Jesse said. "Evan Kane Updike, May 26, 1946. I'm not sure this gets us anywhere, but it's something. See if you can find him."
"Gee, Poirot, I never would have thought of that on my own."
"Wise ass, get out of my office." She left.
Jesse stood, stretching some of the weariness out of his muscles, staring out his office window. He would head over to Stiles Island in a little while, but first he wanted to have a chat with Roscoe Niles. The night before, Spencer had mentioned the guy who had worked as the engineer for the Hangman's Sonnet recording sessions. If anyone might know the man's name, it would be Roscoe Niles. Niles had an encyclopedic knowledge of those sorts of facts. He could tell you who played tambourine or triangle on obscure tracks. Jesse would ask Stan White the same question in a little while, but he didn't trust White to begin with, and trusted him even less after his reaction in the mayor's office. Unfortunately, his calls to Roscoe's house went unanswered.
Jesse was in the process of leaving a voicemail message when Molly burst back into his office. "Jesse, you better get over to the nature preserve," she said. "Why?" "I just got a call on the station number. Said we'd find something in the old tool shed."
"Same anonymous guy as before?"
"The number was blocked like before, but I couldn't tell for sure. I sent Gabe ahead to secure the area."
"Good. Did the caller say what we'd find?"
"Only that we'd find something in the shed."
Jesse smiled. Whoever they were dealing with was getting impatient. Maybe too impatient for his own good.
Chapter 66. Gabe Weathers was leaning against the front fender of his cruiser when Jesse pulled up.
"Did you approach the shed?"
"No, Jesse. The tape is still up from when the body was found over there. So I just stayed here to make sure no runners or hikers approached the shed. I haven't seen a soul since I arrived."
"Okay, you sit tight," Jesse said, putting on gloves. "Get Peter down here just in case I find something in there."
"Think it's another body?"
"If it is, you'll be calling Molly Chief Crane."
Gabe laughed. When he saw that Jesse was serious, he stopped. But for the sounds of chirping birds, small animals rustling the leaf litter, and the barking of angry squirrels, there was a strange stillness in the air. Jesse didn't like it. But he hadn't liked much of anything lately. From the morning of Suit's wedding, when he hid his shaky hands as he listened to Bascom, White, and Bella go on about Terry Jester, to that moment in the woods, everything had seemed just a little off. He thought back to earlier in the day, to how Bella Lawton had just shown up at his door to offer herself up to him for the asking. And he recalled how on his drive into town he'd had the sense he was being watched. He felt that way now. He ducked under the tape and felt the earth give under his weight. "Did it rain last night?" he asked, turning back to Gabe.
"Sprinkled on and off for about a few hours, but nothing to speak of."
"And you're sure you haven't seen anyone?"
"Not unless you count a doe and her fawn."
"You're a funny man, Gabe."
"My wife doesn't think so. By the way, Peter's en route."
Jesse stayed close to the tape as he approached the shed. As he walked, he looked at the ground near the shed. He noted the deer tracks, but didn't see fresh shoe prints anywhere. That didn't necessarily mean there wasn't something in the shed. The call to Molly might have come in only 15 minutes ago, but what was left in the shed might have been left there before it rained. He stood by the shed, looked it over thoroughly before opening the door. He wasn't exactly sure what he was looking for, but whatever it was, he didn't find it. He pulled the door back. Nothing. Well, nothing but what had been there the day they found Kernet's body. Just spider webs and the handle to an old rake or shovel that had probably been there untouched for years.
"Anything, Jesse?" Gabe called to him.
"Not a thing. Call Peter and tell him not to bother. False alarm." Weathers ducked his head into his cruiser and did as he was told.
"Okay, Jesse, Peter's gone back on patrol."
Jesse came away from the shed and stood about dead center of the tape perimeter. He was facing away from Weathers, towards Sawtooth Creek.
"Gabe," he said, not turning around, "were you a ball player as a kid?"
"I was a shooting guard on my high school basketball team."
His voice was full of pride.
"Any good?"
"I could shoot the lights out,
but I wasn't great at creating shots for myself off the dribble."
"How did you feel when the other team controlled the tempo?"
"I hated it."
"Me too, Gabe. I've never liked it when other people dictated the pace of things, or when a guy on the other team deked me into making a stupid move."
"What's this about, Jesse?"
"It's about me being tired of the other team controlling the tempo and trying to distract me."
"Whatever you say."
Jesse turned to face his man.
"Okay, Gabe, you can get back to work."
When Gabe was gone, Jesse spun around. Unable to shake the feeling that he was being watched, he stared into the woods between him and the creek, but saw nothing. He made a slow sweep with his eyes, swiveling his head, looking for something, anything, to lock onto. Then, to his left, in the thickest part of the woods, he thought he caught sight of something,
a shape moving among the trees. Then there was no movement but for the leaves and limbs swaying in the breeze. He kept looking, waiting for the shape to emerge from the backdrop. There it was again, movement in the trees, not caused by the wind. Jesse still couldn't make out the shape, its silhouette broken up by the sway of the leaves and shadows. Things got very still, unnaturally still. That's when Jesse noticed a glint, the sun reflecting off something near where he had last seen the shape. His reflexes took over, and Jesse dove to his left. Behind him, something slammed into the side of the shed, tiny splinters flying off into space. The sound of the rifle shot echoed through the woods. Another shot, this one much lower, cut another hole in the side of the shed, the echo seeming to almost overwhelm the report of the first shot. Jesse Combat crawled away from the shed as quickly as he could manage, his right shoulder barking at him as he went. He found cover behind some trees, stayed flat on his belly, waiting for more shots to follow. They never came. After a few minutes, his 9mm in hand, Jesse looked around to where he had seen the shape against the trees and reflection in the leaves. There was nothing to see. The only shapes visible were ones that belonged to nature. Still, Jesse kept low as he worked his way to his explorer. At least I'm not imagining things, he thought, as he drove back into town. Someone had been watching. Chapter 67. What had just happened in the preserve didn't make any sense to Jesse. He was about to call an old friend to discuss it when the sound of a ringing phone came over the speakers in his car, and Roscoe Niles' name flashed onto the dashboard screen.
I've been trying to call.
Yeah, Jesse, what?
Roscoe's voice was almost comically thick with drink.
Rough evening?
At my age, with my vices, they're all rough. Some are just rougher than others.
Why didn't you pick up before?
Niles was surprised.
You called? I was out of it, man. Johnny Red and I spent a lot of time together last night. What can I do you for?
Two things. Are you on the air today?
I'm always on the air.
Well, until I get the official word about my last day, why?
Can you do me a favor?
Depends. What do you need?
I might call you later and ask you to read the sonnet on the air. And if I do, read it as many times as you want. Play wall-to-wall Terry Jester if you feel like it, and imply that the missing tape may soon resurface.
You sure about this, Jesse? Yesterday you told me.
Yesterday was yesterday. Things have changed.
Like what?
My mood.
Niles's laugh was phlegmy, and laughing set him off on a coughing jag.
What the hell? They can only fire me once, right? I'll be glad to do it, man.
Where are you, Roscoe? It sounds like you're outside.
Oh, I had to step out to smoke, man. What's the other thing, Jesse?
Do you know who engineered the Hangman's Sonnet sessions? There was a long pause, and then he said,
Sorry, pal, but like everything else about those sessions, the names of the people who worked in the studio are shrouded in secrecy.
But there are rumors, like the rumors about the musicians.
Not really, Jesse. The musicians matter to the public. No one gives a shit about who worked the board. Why do you ask?
Someone mentioned him to me but didn't recall his name, Jesse said, unwilling to go into the details of his conversation with Spencer.
Sorry, man. I wish I could be more helpful. Listen, you sure about the poem?
No, but do it anyway.
Jesse clicked off and called Healy.
Jesse, how the hell are you?
Someone just tried to kill me.
That's not funny, Jesse. Don't even joke like that.
I wasn't joking.
What do you need?
Jesse asked, Can you meet me at the Rusty Scupper in the swap in a half hour?
Only if you say please.
Please.